The following talk was given by Norm Randolph at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on October 6, 2024. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. Well, thank you for coming today. I'm going to be talking about Zen practice again today. Zen practice is to live as we truly are. And already we're living as we truly are. But, we're already living our true life. We're already living as our true self. But usually when we start out in Zen practice, we think of Zen practice as a means or a technique for gain and improvement. And usually when we start out in Zen practice, we're usually very caught up in our one-sided ideas and beliefs about ourselves, others, and the nature of reality. And we're caught up in the sense that we believe reality corresponds to the one-sided ideas and beliefs that we have about it. And we live our lives based on this belief. This is how our true life is ignored or overlooked. So our practice is to see and let go of how our true life is ignored, and to live as we truly are, to live as the true self, living as we truly are. To carry out this practice is to be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. In this practice of here and now awareness, when it becomes evident that we're caught up in our expectations and caught up in our one-sided ideas and beliefs, practice is to let go of them. By resuming the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. And this practice of here and now awareness or awakeness, the expectations, ideas, and beliefs can be seen through, and they drop away by themselves. It becomes directly evident that a true life, here now reality, directly experienced here now reality, could not correspond to or match the one-sided ideas and beliefs that we have about it. That becomes directly evident in Zen practice. It's not something that can be figured out, but in this practice of awareness, it can eventually become directly evident. Our true life, our true self, our true nature is what is being directly experienced here and now. And no matter what we say about it, our true life, true self, true nature, it cannot be described. It can't be explained or conceptually pinned down. It's not something that can be seen objectively either. Nevertheless, it is clear and obvious. It's clear and obvious in the sense that it's being directly experienced here and now. And everything is a manifestation of it. It's not something that can be hidden. The Zen teacher Suzuki Roshi used to say, when you see something or hear a sound, there you have everything just as it is. Everything is manifesting right now, showing up as the sound or a visual image or some experience, it looks like some particular experience. But everything is included in that experience. This true self, true life, true nature is being directly experienced now with nothing missing. But nevertheless, we're very, usually very confused about what our true life is. And this is because we believe so deeply that reality corresponds to the one-sided ideas and beliefs that we have about it. And we live our lives based on our one-sided ideas and beliefs and ignore directly experienced here-now reality. This is a very deeply rooted situation for us. When it becomes evident that we're caught up in our ideas and beliefs and thereby ignoring directly experienced here-now reality, resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. Not being aware because we expect to gain something from it, not being aware because we think we'll verify the ideas and beliefs that we have about our life. Just being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. And as I mentioned before, in this practice of here-now awareness, expectations, ideas, and beliefs can be seen through and they drop away by themselves. It becomes directly evident that the life we're living, the directly experienced reality of here and now, could not correspond or match the ideas and beliefs that we have about it, or the expectations that we have about it. Although whatever we say about our life doesn't completely say it, still we have to say something. Teachers have to give pointers or teachings using words and concepts to help their students in their investigation of direct here-now experience. These pointers are meant as suggestions to help the students in their investigation of directly experienced here-now reality. The teacher does not want the students to grasp, cling to, and believe what is said. Instead, the teacher is trying to offer helpful suggestions to help the students directly realize and live their true life. And in doing this, the teacher might speak in terms of conventional common sense ideas and appearances, in which reality seems to be dualistically structured. You might offer practical suggestions, common sense suggestions to people. But reality seems to be dualistically structured, but in our practice, it can also be realized that this is a reality in which all beings are living inseparably from each other. So we don't cling to the idea that it's a dualistically structured reality of many separate things. We don't cling to the idea it's all oneness. It's, but sometimes the teacher might speak in terms of oneness, and or he might speak in terms of universality, wholeness, totality, emptiness, non-substantiality, Buddha nature. But the teacher doesn't want to give his students ideas to grasp, cling to, and believe. He doesn't want his students to believe the one-sided ideas and beliefs that the teacher uses in pointing to reality. The teacher is trying to give suggestions to his students to help them realize their true life beyond any ideas of what their true life is. He isn't trying to give them ideas to grasp and cling to. Instead, he's just trying to offer pointers or teachings or suggestions that can help his students realize their true life beyond any idea of what their true life is. What our true life is not something that can be packaged within a conceptual description, not something that can be packaged within an idea. So he doesn't want them to grasp the ideas he uses. He's just trying to give them pointers or helpful suggestions that might help them realize what their true life is. Beyond any idea of what their true life is. I've been saying that the practice of living as we truly are is to be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. And when people first hear that, they probably will think, oh, I should be aware here and now. Eventually, it can be directly realized that directly experienced awareness here and now is what we are, what we truly are. Awareness is not some particular thing that a particular separate individual is doing in order to gain benefit. It can be directly realized that this directly experienced awareness is what we truly are. And once again, this statement is not an idea to be grasped and believed. This statement is a pointer to help us in our investigation of directly experienced here now reality and to help us directly realize what we truly are and to help us directly realize what this practice of living as we truly are actually is. Teacher is just trying to give pointers, giving suggestions to help his students. Doesn't want them to grasp the ideas he offers to them. So eventually it can be realized that directly experienced awareness here and now is what we truly are. And each being is a manifestation of this awareness or awakeness. And the technical term for this awareness or awakeness is Buddha nature. Buddha nature is the beginningless, endless, all-inclusive, subjectless, objectless, awareness or awakeness itself. And it's not an it. It's not something in particular. Each being is manifesting this awareness or awakeness in its own unique way. The teacher Katagiri Roshi, throughout his teaching career, used to say, you are Buddha. All beings are Buddha. All beings are Buddha in the sense that all beings are manifestations of Buddha nature, and each being is manifesting this Buddha nature in its own unique way. So ultimately, practice is not a means to become an awakened person or a Buddha. Practice is to be the Buddha or awareness, awakeness that you are right now, and to respect each being as Buddha beyond our conventional one-sided ideas of respect and beyond our conventional one-sided ideas of Buddha. Our true life, our true self, our true nature is the Buddha nature. Practices to see and let go of how our Buddha nature is ignored and to fully live as the Buddhas that we truly are. And I mentioned that Kadokei Roshi very strongly taught this, that saying you are Buddha, all beings are Buddha. And the Zen teacher Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, who wrote the book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, probably some of you are familiar with that book. He is also the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center. And he talks about this. He talks about our practices to be Buddha. This is our practice, moment after moment. When it is hot, this is Suzuki Roshi speaking. This is at a lecture he gave at the Zen Center Monastery in California. Suzuki Roshi said, when it is hot, you should be hot Buddha. When it is cold, you should be cold Buddha. That is our practice. And when your practice is not good, you're a poor Buddha. When your practice is good, you are a good Buddha. And poor and good are Buddhas themselves. Poor is Buddha and good is Buddha. And you are Buddha also. Whatever you think or say, every word becomes Buddha. I am Buddha. I is Buddha. And am is Buddha. And Buddha is Buddha. Buddha, 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 whatever you say. Then there is no problem. Buddha, 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 Buddha. There is no need to translate it into English. No need to be bothered with fancy explanations of Buddhism. Everything is Buddha's. Everything is Buddha. Lying down is Buddha, sitting is Buddha, each word is Buddha. If you say Buddha, 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 that is our way. When you practice Zazen with this understanding, that is true practice. When you accept yourself as Buddha, or understand everything as an unfolding of the truth or Buddha or Buddha nature. When you reach this understanding, whatever you think or see is the actual teaching of Buddha, and whatever you do is the actual practice of Buddha. It's a very interesting statement, in my opinion. But once again, I want to emphasize that Suzuki Roshi and Kadokei Roshi weren't trying to give us an idea to grasp and believe. They were trying to give us a very helpful suggestion to help us directly realize our true life as it is, beyond any idea of what our true life is. And I'd like to tell a story again. I've told this story I think maybe about 6 months ago. It's a story about the Zen teacher Kyogen and his teacher Isan. And so Kyogen's teacher one time asked Isan, he said to Isan, no, I mean, I'm sorry, Isan said to Kyogen, his disciple Kyogen, Isan said, what is your true self before your parents were born? In other words, what is your true self before you have any idea of what it is? And Kyogen was a very intellectual person. And he was very sharp intellectually and had a great memory. And so in order to try and answer his teacher Isan's question, he looked at his notes that he'd taken of Isan's lectures, and he looked at a lot of Buddhist scriptures that he'd been reading. He's trying to find an answer to Isan's question. But every answer that he presented to his teacher Isan, Isan rejected. Kyogen was trying to come up with the right idea of what the true self was. And whatever Kyogen came up with, Isan would reject. So finally, Kyogen said, well, just why don't you just tell me? I don't know. I give up. Please just tell me. And Isan said, whatever I tell you, that's just my idea. It's not what your true self actually is. So Kyogen was very discouraged at this point. He decided he would give up on trying to understand what his true self was. And so he left Isan's monastery and threw away his books. And he began to live the life of a homeless wandering monk. He would travel around to different monasteries, working on the work crew, working on the meal serving crew. Sometimes he'd just travel around. One time he ended up as the gravekeeper at the gravesite of a Zen master who'd lived several hundred years before. And Kyogen's job was to sweep up around the gravesite and keep it clean and weeded. And one day while Kyogen was sweeping the walk, he swept a pebble, and the pebble hit a bamboo. And at the sound of the pebble hitting the bamboo, Kyogen directly realized his true self. He didn't get the right idea about it. That wasn't what he realized. He realized directly what his true life was. This was Kyogen's great experience. At that time, or shortly after that, Kyogen bowed in the direction of Isan's monastery and said, if you had given me some idea to grasp, I could never have had this great realization that I had today. So, shortly after that, Kyogen wrote a poem. And there are many different versions to the poem. I picked out one I thought was a good one. And he described his experience and his understanding, since he directly realized who he truly was. I'll read the poem. Kyogen wrote, one hit, and all my ideas and beliefs were seen through. I no longer live my life based on egocentric confusion. In each moment, I practice the Buddha way, the way of awakeness. I no longer strive for particular states of mind. I no longer live a life of attachment I'm not restricted by rules of conduct. Those who have realized this call it the unsurpassable way of life. So I'll say a little bit about these statements by Kyogen. One hit, and all my preconceived ideas and beliefs were seen through, and directly realizing what his true self was. Kyogen realized that this, what his true life was, could not correspond or match the ideas that he had about it. His true life isn't something that can be figured out or explained conceptually. Reality couldn't be the way that he was trying to conceptually grasp it. Kyogen was trying to get the right idea about what his life was and overlooking the actual direct experience. But in directly realizing his true life, Kyogen realized that reality couldn't be that way. So next, Kyogen says, I no longer live my life based on egocentric confusion. Kyogen clearly sees that he's not some separate ego self living his life in dualistic relationship to other individuals, things, and situations. No longer is caught by that belief in that he's a separate ego self. Though reality shows up with the appearance of, seems like, they're separate ego selves, and we're living, I'm a separate ego self, and we're living in a reality where there are other separate ego selves. And directly realizing what our life is, it becomes evident that this directly experienced reality is manifesting in such a way that it appears that it's a reality of separation. It appears to be a reality that he's an ego self living in dualistic relationship to others. But once he directly realizes what his true life is, he's no longer caught up in this egocentric confusion. Kyogen goes on to say, in each moment I practice the Buddha way, the way of awakeness. By this, Kyogen means that he wholeheartedly lives the awareness, the awakeness, or Buddha nature. That is his true life, his true self, his true nature. So to do that, Kyogen notices when his true life or true self or true nature is being ignored. And when he notices that, he resumes the practice of being aware here and now. Wholeheartedly being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. Not to get the right idea about what life is, or not to for gain an improvement. He just wants to live this true life without being caught up in his limited views. But old habits die hard. We have very deeply rooted tendency to interpret our life in these egocentric, dualistic ways. So we need to continue with this practice of awareness. It's very important to continue with it and resume this practice when we find ourselves getting caught up. Kyogen goes on to say, I no longer strive for particular states of mind. There's a teaching in the What's the name of that? Oh, Trusting the Heart Mind. Yeah, we chant it on Friday nights. There's a teaching in there. It says, don't seek after truth. Only cease to cherish opinions. We don't need to seek after truth, which is our true life, our true self, or true nature. We don't need to do that. We just need to let go of our one-sided dualistic opinions about what it is. Truth or our true life is right here now. We don't need to go seeking for it as something apart from ourselves. But usually we're very much caught up in our one-sided ideas and beliefs. And Zen teacher Dogen used to say, the reason you don't wake up is that you don't relinquish your views. But we're already living this reality. It's just because we're holding so tightly to our limited one-sided ideas and beliefs and views that we overlook it and ignore it. But usually when people start out in Zen practice, they think, I want to strive and seek for enlightenment, peace, freedom, wisdom, awareness, awakeness, Buddha nature. I want to strive for these states of mind, but we don't have to strive for them as something that exists apart from us and that we'll realize in the future. These states of mind are inseparable from our true life here and now. And Kyogen goes on to say, I no longer live a life of attachment. And usually we live our lives based on wanting to attach. We want to attach to what we like and attach to situations where what we dislike is not there. We live lives of attachment. We like to attach to ideas that sound good to us. Like to attach to the people that we like and attach to states where the people we don't like are gone. We usually live a life of attachment because we don't see what our life is. But strictly speaking, we can't attach. It's not possible to attach. And reminds me of a story that a person told me about Suzuki Roshi. Suzuki Roshi one time said, you cannot have attachments. And the person who heard this said, well, he probably meant you shouldn't have attachments because obviously we have lots of attachments. So it's because Suzuki Roshi isn't familiar with English. He meant to say you shouldn't have attachments, but because of his lack of familiarity with English, he ended up saying you can't have attachments. So, but eventually this person heard Suzuki Roshi say this, and she really heard what he said. She suddenly realized you can't have attachments. You're not a separate individual who could attach, and they're not living in a reality of other separate beings who could be attached to. Attachment is impossible. But still, reality manifests with the appearance of looks like they're separate individuals who could attach and other separate individuals, things, and situations that could be attached to. Looks like a reality where attachment could take place. We don't deny that. We function in that reality where it looks like attachment could take place. But we don't one-sidedly buy into the belief that attachment is possible. And this is what Kyogen means when he says, I no longer live a life of attachment. Kyogen goes on to say, I'm not restricted by rules of conduct. strictly speaking, the true self is not something that could be restricted by anything. But the true self functions and manifests itself in such a way that it looks like a reality where there are things that could be restricted. It looks like a reality of this that could be hindered by that, and looks like a reality of separate individuals and things, and in this reality we need rules and laws to function in this seemingly dualistic reality. But this reality manifests with that appearance. The true life manifests with that appearance, but Kyongya doesn't get taken in by the belief that restriction is possible. He functions in reality which seems to involve restriction and involve laws and rules. He doesn't throw out the rules. He functions in reality which seems to be where it seems to be necessary to follow rules without clinging to the idea, yes, I must follow these rules. Sometimes the Buddhist precepts are thought of as rules of conduct for separate individuals. But the precepts, strictly speaking, are not roles for the separate individuals that we seem to be. These precepts are pointers to help us realize when we're getting caught up in our one-sided ideas, when we're getting caught up in the idea of being a separate individual living in a divided-up reality. Precepts are trying to give us helpful suggestions. They're pointers and teachings to help us realize when we're getting caught up in our one-sided ideas about what our life is, and to help us resume the practice of living as we truly are. Strictly speaking, the precepts are not rules that a particular individual has to follow. And Kyogen deeply realized that. Kyogen ends up saying, those who have realized this call it the unsurpassable way of life. So people who have realized what this way of life is call it the unsurpassable way of life. This is a reality of life that is not in dualistic relationship to anything else. This is a reality that can't find anything outside of it. It's a beginningless, endless, boundless, subjectless, objectless, all-inclusive reality that is, we can't pin down what it is. But our practice is to live this life, directly realize and see when we're ignoring it and resuming the practice of really living that life. It's an unsurpassable way of life because this way of life involves living together with all beings. Living together with all beings who are mutually assisting and mutually influencing each other. It's a reality where all beings are functioning inseparably. Our practice is to live this life wholeheartedly and to fully participate in this reality where all beings are functioning together inseparably and assisting each other unrestrictedly. Our practice is to live this unsurpassable way of life. It's great beyond comparison. It's not something that could be compared to anything else. This is the true life that we're living. This is what Kyogen calls the unsurpassable way of life. Or an incomparable way of life. It's not something that can be compared to something else. What could you compare it to? Do you have any questions or comments about any of this? Okay, well, good. I didn't feel like explaining anything. I can't explain. I just lead you into states of confusion. Oh, I spoke too soon.
Norm?
Yes.
Lately, I've been spending a whole lot of time with some of the teachings, because I was thinking, like, those monks, they meditate, but they also, or do zazen, but they also, it sounds like they spend a lot of time studying texts. And that's what I've been doing. And when I study them, I sometimes get an idea I didn't have before. And so I think, well, like, collect these things or look through my notes and make more notes on the notes and looking at what I've missed, even though I listen to talks just about every day. And it sounds like I'm kind of on the wrong deal here. Maybe turning these ideas into objects and putting myself in there as the one who's looking. You know what I mean? You're sounding like a lot freer than I've let myself be, because I fear that I'll forget what to do, and then I remember it's so simple. So I'm wondering, those teachers and students who talk about all these texts and this one says this and that, or is it better just, I mean, for me, better just to go along and be more present with not trying to grasp so many ideas? It sounds like what you're saying.
Well, ideas and beliefs are not something to throw away. They can be very helpful as pointers. The problem is when we believe that reality exactly matches or corresponds to the ideas and beliefs we have about it. So ideas are very helpful. We use them in the teachings. We talk about different ideas. But it's not for the purpose of grasping some idea and saying, yes, reality exactly corresponds to this idea here. So we can benefit from having these ideas pointed out to us. The problem arises when we grasp and believe that reality exactly corresponds to these ideas and beliefs. That's where the problem is. But these ideas are not to be thrown out. They're very helpful. They give us lots of helpful suggestions about what our life is and what this way of life is. And they can give us helpful suggestions about how to live our lives in practical ways. They're very valuable for giving suggestions and pointers and teachings, but the problem is that there is a very strong tendency we have to grasp them and believe them. That's the problem. Is this making sense?
Yes. It does. It feels encouraging too, because, you know, it all has some real value. And when I'm away from those things, I get real caught up in just the regular, you know what I mean? Just nothing world, material world, or I don't know how to describe it, but a way that's not very conscious, I guess. I don't know. But thank you. This is encouraging. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Anything else? Okay, well, thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.